Pero I would like to invite our first speaker. He's Carlos Zorrilla. He's at the moment in Ecuador, but I will pass it to Liz.
Hi, Carlos, we're working in solidarity with Carlos and a few other people in particularly the northwest of Ecuador, because we have multiple Australian companies mining, exploring at this point in the area, which Carlos will explain, is one of the most biodiverse regions in the world. It's got the indigenous lands of the Awa people. It's got communities, it's got source water areas, and we've got BHP, we've got SolGold, Hancock Prospecting, or Hanrine, owned by Gina Reinhart. And a total of, across Ecuador, we've got about 3 million hectares of Ecuador that are currently under mining concessions from multinational companies all over the world. At last count, which was 3 years ago, so this will be desperately out of date now. The mining registry in Ecuador, the cadastro, is being updated all the time, but about 36% were Australian companies in Ecuador. So it's quite a serious problem. And Carlos has been an anti-mining activist for decades, which he will explain. I'll hand it over to you, Carlos.
Yep. Well, thank you for the invitation, for the chance to let other people know what's going on in not only our region, but Latin America in general. Ecuador is just a reflection of what's going on all over this beautiful continent. Yeah, I've been involved in anti-mining since 1995, when the Japanese came in to try and open a copper mine. And they were driven out by the communities. And then the Canadians came in 2004, and they were driven out by the communities in 2009. And in 2012, the government signed a deal with Chile to develop the mine with Codelco, the world's largest copper producer. And they couldn't go in being the nice guys, so they brought in police and military, and they installed themselves in primary cloud forest. And the way they go about trying to buy leaders and trying to get the social license happens, it's pretty much the same everywhere. If they try to be nice, to play the role of the nice guys, giving people and offering things, roads, computers for schools, medicines for the clinics, they'll do anything to get the approval, and it usually works. Money works in most cases. In our case, because of the long struggle, it was harder for the mining companies. That's why they had to use the police and military. And they had the same thing happen north of us in the same province not too long ago with the Hancock subsidiary here. They couldn't go in the nice way, so the government helped them, and 500 police and military escorted them to their mining site. So this is becoming a norm in Ecuador. There's a lot of opposition, and the companies threatened to take Ecuador to the international tribunals if they are not allowed to work in their mining concessions. And that's an interesting aspect of mining, transnational mining companies, is that these governments sign bilateral trade agreements or investment protection agreements, and then the countries feel obligated to support transnational mining no matter what the cost. Gross human rights abuse, despoiling primary cloud forests. In our case, they found copper in this beautiful primary cloud forest region, very steep. There's hundreds of species facing extinction. And you heard me right, hundreds of species facing extinction in this area. It rains between 3 and 5 meters. It's, It's a very, very challenging environment. And it will be one of the most devastating mining projects in the world because of the ecological and geological conditions of the area. But it has becoming a modus operandi with the mining companies first try to go the peaceful way. That doesn't work out a lot. And if they eventually demand that the government supports them. In our case, I mentioned it was copper, but it's the same. It could be gold, the two most sought after commodities right now in Ecuador. Chile is lithium, Argentina, copper, gold, and lithium. In our case, it's mostly copper and gold. And yeah, the title of the talk was interesting. The extractivism is not development. It would be nice in a rational world, we would stop talking about development and start talking about well-being. Because when people, they associate development or wealth to monetary or material wealth, which is only one type of wealth. And unless we get those values right, unless we realize that there are many, many kinds of wealth, social, cultural wealth, environmental wealth, the wealth of the land, the fertility of the land, for example, the biodiversity, those are all wealth that the companies and the government never take into account when they agree, when they permit all these mining projects. One of the things that we've been doing in Intag, we've been working, it'll be soon 27 years, is to try and educate the people, make them aware of this other types of wealth. And what you sacrifice when you allow large scale mining into your area. You destroy all this other capital, all this other wealth, just to focus on what's the wealth below the ground. And the wealth above the ground is what we need to really focus on. And it's very difficult, as if some of your activists know, money is a very strong, a terrific, powerful tool for the mining companies. And then the idea of what development is, a lot of people think development, of course, is having a car, high-paying job. They don't really think about having a peaceful society and having rivers that you can swim in and not worry about being sick, or fishing from a river and knowing that it's healthy food, growing organic food. That type of well-being doesn't compute into these extractive projects. And one of the things that we all can do is trying to emphasize that the wealth above the ground, it's much greater than the wealth underground. And I'd like to hear some of the stories from your corners of the world about how you confront this idea of development, because it is so entrenched and it's so dominant. It's very, very difficult to overcome. And so this is what's happening now. Where I live in Intag, my house and my forest is concession to BHP. My whole community is concession to BHP, and about 90% of this beautiful watershed. There was no consultation, neither with the communities or the local governments. So BHP just goes in there and they try to develop the mine. Their presence was firmly rejected 2 years ago. And today I got a phone call about a half hour ago, a friend of mine saying that there's some people asking where they could set up a camp, a mining camp. It could be BHP, but something to highlight is that these companies have money and they have time. And they'll just try and wear you down over and over again. And this is what you fight against. This extractive industry is very powerful. In our area, there's really no indigenous communities. There's campesinos communities, which have less rights than indigenous communities. So the only thing that counts here is awareness. And this is what's kept mining companies. There's no open pit mines. There's no large scale mines where we are. We managed to stop it for 26 and a half years. Codelco's in there now. They did exploration, but they have not been able to go forward with exploitation. And if they do go ahead, it will be one of the most devastating mining projects in the world. And so I'd like to count on your support whenever possible, because we will definitely need it, seeing who we're up against. I'm going to leave it now and see if people would like to ask questions, because I could go on. It's such a long story, you know. But I don't know, Liz, should I highlight something that might be interesting?
Yeah, I think, I mean, just maybe in terms of the human rights abuses, not so much, well, that's probably slightly north of Intag, as the Hanrin concessions. And I guess, so that's, you know, we're starting to get human rights stuff, but also, yeah, I guess, as you say, there's so many different stories, isn't there? And there was also the massive amount of, can you talk just a couple of minutes about the community mobilization that you've done already and the Intag Santuario de Vida?
Right. Yeah. Mining countries like these are accompanied by human rights abuses. Just the fact that they had to rely on hundreds of police to go into Codelco, to go into its concession in 2014. They occupied the whole area, not just the mining site, but the whole Intag area was occupied. The police were stopping buses from going in, which is completely illegal. The police set up a camp right in the community that was most actively against the mining company. And so human rights, violence in mining and large-scale mining go hand in hand. So that's, we have to be clear about that. In Buenos Aires, it happened the same formula. In Buenos Aires, the mining company tries to bribe their way in to offer things that doesn't work. Eventually, in our case, we received death threats. In my case particular, too, mining company set up a false lawsuit to get me arrested. And my house was invaded by 19 police at 6 o'clock in the morning one day. So all these human rights abuses accompany mining projects. When you have a government that's so complicit, you really don't, where can you turn to if the government's violating, if they're the ones that are violating your right? In Buenos Aires, the Hancock subsidiary couldn't access their mining concession. They pressured the government, probably by threatening to sue them, to take them to the international tribunal. And finally, the government relented, and they sent in 500 police and military to escort the mining company to the mining concession. What's happening is, in the future, all these mining sites will be militarized. There's so much opposition, that's almost an inevitable outcome.